The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, happy Saturday, one and all. Welcome to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS every Saturday morning from 6 to 9. Great to be with you as we have now officially crossed that nine-year mark as of this past Wednesday of the Jimmy Sengenberger Show on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Thanks so much for being along for the ride. We have a jam-packed show today because we are going to have some extended conversations. And I'm doing this Conversations with the Candidates series and things along those lines through the election. And I only got 3 hours a week that I can fill. So we're not going to be able to take any calls today, unfortunately. You could still text into the show on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. If you don't have it, what are you doing? Check it out now and download the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. You can also tweet at me 24/7, 365. I am at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. You can also email me via 710knus.com and go to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show page, or email me via my website, the all-new jimmysengenberger.com. Remember, there's no A, I, or U in Sengenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sengenberger is easy. So there are still lots of ways to get in touch with the program. Coming up in the next hour, we are anticipating on a special guest coming in studio for a full hour. That would be Aaron Kane, the superintendent of Douglas County Schools. Looking forward to talking with her about the initiatives for the bond and MLO, mill levy override, those issues that folks are looking at on the ballot, but really what the impact that could be on the school system and more. We've got a bunch of things we will talk about with Superintendent Aaron Kane. We'll also be joined here in studio to continue our conversations with the candidates by Heidi Ganahl for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm looking forward to delving into depth with her and having Heidi in here. Coming up later in this hour, I had my new column yesterday. This one was a doozy. Tay Anderson uses his police privilege. I had the great opportunity, and I'm grateful for it always, to join none other than Stephen Tubbs yesterday on his show to talk about it. And specifically what I learned as far as Tay's the school board member for Denver Public Schools, vice president, who was caught speeding in a school zone. What I learned about his police contacts, specifically with the current and past chiefs of police. If you missed it, if you haven't read the article yet, which you can check out at the columns page at denvergazette.com. You can also go to my Twitter at Sang Center. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. It's the pinned tweet right there. Then you'll get a little bit of the skinny here coming up later on in this hour. But coming up in the next segment, we are going to take a super early break because on Thursday, I caught up with one of the greatest, most underrated guitar players in the country, nay, probably the world. His name is Albert Cummings. You're going to hear some tunes from Albert as well. He's playing at Daniels Hall, put on by Swallow Hill Music, this evening. I think it's an 8 p.m. show, and I've been following Albert since 2006, and he's incredible, and so many people don't know about him, and I want more folks to know about him, and since I've been following him for so long, I wanted to take some time to do the interview. I caught up with him, went a little longer than I anticipated. Want to make sure we play that in full and you get some nice, tasty tunes as well. So, coming up, my interview with Albert Cummings. You will enjoy this. Then, in the next hour, Aaron Kane, Douglas County Schools Superintendent. And the 8 o'clock hour, Heidi Ginnall, Republican candidate for governor, also joining us here in studio. We are going to take a super early break. We will be back with some music and conversation. Best damn bumper music known to man. 9 years running here on Denver's local talk leader. You're listening to The Jimmy Sengenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS.
Jimmy Sengenberger, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Nothing better, folks, to rev you up on a Saturday morning than some of the best damn bumper music known to man right here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Good to be with you with some Albert Cummings rocking and rolling us back from his most recent album called 10. And even better, isn't it such a treat? When the man himself on that fiery guitar, that great voice, the passion always flying, Albert Cummings joins you himself on the program. Good morning, Albert, and welcome. It's good to talk with you.
Good morning, everybody. Glad to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you. We're recording this on Thursday, but folks will be listening to this on Saturday. So tonight, let's say, you are going to be playing at a show put on by Swallow Hill Music at Daniels Hall. I'm hoping to make it. I think it is always great when you can get out and, in your case, play some live music. I front my own blues band on harmonica here in Denver, so I know what that's like. But for the audience to get out there and see some live music again and have a great time, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I can't wait for it. I'm excited about this event for sure. Excited about being in Colorado. I love being in Colorado.
It is a beautiful state. I don't think you've played here nearly enough, so it's good to see you getting around more in this state. For folks who aren't familiar with Albert Cummings, talk to us a little bit about your background, because you didn't start your career in music. You did something a little bit more, different kind of usage of your hands, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was a fourth-generation builder, never considered any type of music until I was 27 years old when I first played with a band, and that triggered everything. So I'm relatively newcomer really to the whole thing.
So what was that transition like for you from being a carpenter, building, constructing things, to moving into that aspect of music where there is that creative piece? You are using your hands, of course, playing the guitar, but it's very different, and you're entertaining a crowd as opposed to constructing a physical thing.
Yeah, it's a huge different career for sure, but there's some similarities. You know, it's still a business for one. You know, I think the thing with music is there's tons and tons of great builders, you know, and but there's really only one, you know, one Albert when it comes to music. Just like we all have our own little, you know, fingerprint or whatever, but when it comes to music, it is just a one-person sport, you know. So obviously you need band members, you need all the stuff to go with it, but the whole inspiration behind it. So it challenges me in ways that I've never been challenged. Construction was always it was a great business, and it was a very, you know, anybody that's in construction knows it's a tough business, and it's you have to wear a lot of hats and you have to do a lot of things. But when you get into the music world, I find that it makes construction look like a piece of cake. So it challenges me, and it keeps me on my toes, that's for sure.
How would you describe your style of play? Because as you mentioned, you're basically like a one-man guy when you're doing your own thing, you're creating your own style. So what is the Albert Cummings style of playing guitar?
I guess it's just that. You know, I'm not one to know a lot about anybody else's styles or musics. I know a few songs here and there, cover songs or whatever. But I really don't study anything other than my own stuff. So I just create my own music, and it's based on all my influences, and it's everything from Hank Williams Jr. to Stevie Ray Vaughan to Bill Monroe. And I mean, it's all over the place, my genres. And my whole thing is just a combination of all that stuff.
Yeah, I definitely have always heard Albert Cummings, a lot of that Stevie Ray influence, particularly when you're getting in those rock and blues tunes, because he always had that passion and flair in his playing. And that shows whether you're on stage or in the studio. So when you're on stage, though, I always love talking with other musicians about this. When you're on stage and you're feeding off of the crowd, and the crowd is looking up and enjoying this experience and feeding off of you, what is that like, and how does that push your playing, if it does, when you're actually seeing an audience as opposed to, say, in the studio recording an album?
Yeah, for sure, on the stage. And I think the thing that I've come to, I guess, just settle in with is that it doesn't matter if there's 10 people or 10,000 people, it's still, you got to give your all. So if I don't rely so much on the crowd response when I play. I try to deliver what's going on. And I usually, if the crowd is really excited or whatever, I will hear them and I will, you know, will set in. But I think there's, where you're going with maybe is there's a connection, there's an energy connection somehow with
yes.
the audience that is very, I guess, addicting to me. You know, it's like there's something there that happens, and it's just a magical, you know, thing. And I tend to go on stage and literally, I guess, another entity takes over me. I just become a member of the audience. I believe if you're thinking, you're stinking. So I just kind of go out and, I don't use a set list. I just go out and I play what I feel like I'm going to play. And if I get responses from the crowd in certain ways, I kind of go that way. I kind of tail it to what they're wanting, you know? So
we're talking with Albert Cummings, blues rock guitarist extraordinaire, singer, songwriter. He performs live, including at Daniels Hall tonight, September 24th. Albert, how does it feel to get back out on stage and really do this tour? You're telling me it's a longer tour than a lot of times you've done in the past. So what's that like for you?
Well, it's really nice. It's nice to see people kind of coming back out, and you know, you can just see people just had enough of being cooped up, for sure. So it's great to see people. It's great to get out, and it's great to certainly get playing again. You know, we were kind of on hold there for a year and a half or 2 years almost. So touring is great. You know, it takes a lot of, energy to do it and stay on it. And, this has been a little bit longer tour. So we're feeling it, but it's just kind of getting our sea legs back, you know? So, I love every minute of it. So, you know, a bad day in music is a good day in construction, you know.
I want to play a little bit more music for folks from your album 10, but before I do, can you tell me, I mean, one of the things, and we're going to hear this in this song, is that you in this album have some horns that you don't normally have on your albums for a few of the tunes, which I think is a great inclusion. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and also the songwriting process, because your albums are always chock full of originals, if not exclusively originals.
Yeah, usually I'm I try to do mostly originals, maybe one cover. I did the album previous that came out the week that COVID hit. I think we had 5 cover songs on it because we were getting a lot more play when people would be familiar with the song. So I said, I'll throw up some covers out there and get it. But yeah, this album, 13 tracks, all my own. And yeah, some of them have horns on them. You know, I got to work with legendary producers. His name's Chuck Ainley. If you look his name up in Nashville, he's like in the top 5 or top 10 at least. And he's done everything from George Strait to Vince Gill to Mark Knopfler, Dire Straits, all those guys. And Chuck was really influential in helping me with which songs to pick, you know. So I went to Nashville with about 30 songs, and he took me to Peter Frampton's studio, you know, so there it was. And Chuck and I kind of just went through the songs and then narrowed them down. And then as the record kind of developed, then we picked the last songs that would fit with the present songs that we already had, you know. So the album has kind of a feel, even though it's a very diverse album. But, yeah, some of them had horns. So that was, you know, that was Chuck and I just talking about, hey, you know, I think we can put this on here and that on that. And let's do it up. We're in Nashville. Let's make a really cool record. And that's what we did.
Gotta love it. Writing about the album 10, Living Blues says, Cummings does everything right on 10. There's not a bad song here, and the album showcases Cummings' genius as a songwriter, vocalist, and guitarist. Hear a little more for yourself, because I couldn't agree more. Here's one called Alive and Breathing. Let's hear a bit.
Trudging through the sludge of my very existence, and I'm sorry you're feeling that way. Oh, your life that you have, it's a life worth living. You only get one chance to go around. You know you get more bees when you use the honey, so there ain't no walking around with your chin to the ground, put a smile on your face.
Some of the best guitar playing you will hear anywhere. Our guest is Albert Cummings, the man on that Get Fiddle. And Albert, I got to tell you, brother, not only is this a great tune, but your lyrics here in Alive and Breathing almost sound like a everyday conversation that we often have with ourselves when we're like, okay, we're going through all these stressors. It seems like life is going to hell in a handbasket, but all right, we're still alive and breathing.
That's pretty much how simple it has to be. That's kind of what that song is. You know, I experience people that are just down and, you know, whatever. it's kind of like, well, fix it, you know, do something about it. You're still living, and just don't get angry.
Sort of that simple to get inspired for the theme of a tune that is relatable? Or are there times when you're trying to figure out, okay, I got a riff in my mind on the guitar and I'm trying my best to figure out what the lyrics will be or what this song will be about? How does that sort of work for you?
It works both ways with me. Sometimes once I get an idea of what I want for a song, the song is almost finished at that point for me. It's that easy for me to write a song about it, but it's the idea or it's the phrase that hasn't been overdone or oversaid or how it's going to relate to someone. It's just, once I get the idea, I usually can then determine what the message of the song is going to be. And I try to fit my music to the message. So I always capture, if I have a guitar, even sound check, sometimes I'll grab it. And if something comes into my head, I'll just hit the record on my phone and I just record it. And I kind of put that little nut in my little satchel and I hold it there until I get a song. I'm like, wait a minute, this idea kind of fits that riff or that feeling. You know, what I mean is you can't have a happy song with really sad lyrics, right? Everything has to match. You can't put a happy guitar solo in a sad song. It's not gonna feel right. So it's just a simple way to figure out what the idea is, and then I just start writing down ideas of what about the idea, and then pretty soon there's a song and it happens. Sometimes it happens in 5 minutes, sometimes it takes a year and a half for me to finish the song, but it's the ideas that are hard for me to come up with. And they come from every walk of life, you know, phrases I hear somebody say something in a coffee shop or anything, you know, anywhere, any place that could come, you and I talking right now could come up with something, you know. Just, I'm always on the lookout.
Just a few minutes left with our guest, Albert Cummings. He's a masterful guitar player. He burst onto the blues rock scene in the early 2000s. And I have to tell you, Albert, so I'm in my early 30s. And so I first discovered your music really a few years after you started. I was like 16 or something. And I've been hooked ever since, especially because you're clearly pulling, as you're talking about, your crafting of music and writing your songs from lived experience, from things we go through or enjoy on a day-to-day basis. And you're adding in that fiery passion, as I said before, and also just exceptional guitar playing. So I want to let you know that I've been loving you for many years now, and I want you to keep going with your music. And the blues, though, I always like to say music in general is food for the soul, but especially the blues. So let me ask you this question, because, you know, you have something that at least in our 21st century America is a little bit more of a niche genre when you talk about the blues. So why the blues? What is it about the blues that drew you in and continues to draw you in?
Well, I think I really learned that or experienced the drawn in from like B.B. King at first when we used to go see B.B. King. Even before I was playing, I used to love to go see B.B. King play because he'd have that emotion and you could feel his music as well as hear it. And I don't think there's really many genres like that where you can feel it. You can feel the passion and you can feel that.
Yes.
You know, you can, whatever the song's about, you know, it's like, if it's a sad song, you feel that pain that person's feeling. And blues is that music that makes me pay attention to that. So I like to feel the music, and you know, not all the time. I love this, you know, there's all different types of music, right? So it's like, listen to that stuff. But that's the one that I started into. And then of course, when I did and my music kind of like blues, rock, country, it's all over the place, but it's very blues based. And when I did the album with Double Trouble, that really automatically everybody pegged me into the blues world. And you know, that's fine, but whatever. I don't even care about genres. It's just my music is my music, and it fits in a bunch of different categories. But certainly that's it. And that's what blues is to me. Blues is the expression of your feelings. And I think a lot of, you know, I think it's lost in the world of music where they think they don't really understand that. They see blues as a simple you know, it's just blues. You know, it's just simple stuff. It's like, well, it's the hardest thing in the world to express your feelings when you're playing. Absolutely the hardest. You can sit and learn a million songs with a million chords in each one of them. But if it's not expressing feelings, you're just playing what you know, and you're not creating. You're just playing what you know. You're just kind of assembling your thoughts and putting them out through your fingers. But to play what you feel is very difficult. And that's kind of what I strive to do.
I think that's so well said. Blues is the expression of your feelings, and to play with that feeling is a challenge. I mean, there are guys who can be rock guitarists and they think, oh, I can do blues because that's pretty simple. And then you get them into a room or get them on to a staged gig and it's like, okay, they're not really bringing that blues feeling. And then I'll just say, since you mentioned the country influence, and you do have country music superstar Vince Gill on your final track of the album, Last Call. One of my favorite tunes is your cover of Merle Haggard's Working Man. I mean, that you want to talk about energy and passion and fire in a song. That's what you got right there in that version.
Yeah, a lot of people like that version. And I wanted to write a version like that. I remember we were in a Cracker Barrel and I picked up an old CD of, Merle's hits or whatever. And that was on there. I was like, I can't say it any better than him. I just got to say it in a different way. So that's how that song came out for me.
Absolutely. Final question for you, Albert Cummings, and so appreciate your time. You're playing tonight. That will be Saturday the 24th, 8 p.m. at Swallow Hill Music at Daniels Hall. What can people expect from an Albert Cummings show?
I'm a little biased, I guess, but you're going to have it's a fun show. It's a clean show. There's no, I strictly don't have any, I don't have any politics on my stage, any offensiveness, anything at all. It is three guys that go on stage and enjoy playing with each other and enjoy playing for the audience. And Scott Sutherland is on bass and Warren Grant is on drums. And I think they're the two best in the whole world that I've been. I've been to 14 countries so far and every state but Alaska. That's the only one that's eluded me so far. So, you know, every night is a brand new show for us. And we treat it that way because we want it to be spontaneous and we want it to be something that's never been seen and probably will never be seen again. So it's a fun time. That's all I can say. That, I don't know, people like the music or not, but I hope they do. And I hope they come out and I can't wait. So I know I'm going to be there.
You'll have a party right there. That's for darn sure. Albert Cummings, his most recent album, 10, is out. Get tickets for the Daniels Hall concert tonight. I'm hoping to be there. Thank you so much, Albert, for your time. Really appreciate it. Thank and glad you. You're back in Denver.
Well, thank you. And thanks for the invite to be in Denver. Love the people in Colorado.
Once again, blues rock guitarist Albert Cummings joining us here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. And I got to tell you, he is literally one of the best, most underrated guitar players alive today. And to have him in Denver again is incredible. Check him out tonight. Swallow Hill Music presenting Albert Cummings at Daniels Hall. Get tickets at albertcummings.com. We got to take a break. When we come back, the latest on Tay Anderson. What in the world is going on there? Well, I've got some inside stuff you have not heard about. Keep it right here. The Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Daddy was a hard man with a heart of gold. Walked around his town with a story untold. Raised on a little farm with his family of four. Served his country in a time of war. Bullets fly, but so was his flag. He was never one who would ever brag. Lived in a town where a man was his name. Worked every day of his life to be who he became. So when you look a man in the eyes.
We'll
to grow up now. You know, there's certain kind of people who think I'm crazy.
Coming back, Jimmy Sengenberger here with you. News Talk 710 at KNUS. What a great conversation. What incredible music from the phenomenal Albert Cummings, who hails from Massachusetts. Good to be with you this morning. Hope you enjoyed a little break from the craziness and the insanity that is our political world today, and a little talk about music, plus some tunes. What a treat it is to get to have a little bit of fun talking about music, talking with a great guy like Albert Cummings here on The Jimmy Sengenberger Show, literally the best damn bumper music known to man, 9 years running on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Folks, crime, homelessness, inflation, a woke education system. Living in Colorado has never been more frustrating, and the radical progressive agenda is out of control. Now meet the candidates who have a chance to help make a difference at News Talk 710's Rescue Colorado Decision 2022. Join 710's Hugh Hewitt, Congressman Ken Buck, candidate for Senate Joe O'Day, candidate for Governor Heidi Ganahl, and other statewide candidates as we join together to address the serious problems that plague our state. News Talk 710's Rescue Colorado Decision 2022, Tuesday night, October 18th. It's happening at the Douglas County Events Center. Limited VIP seating available. Get tickets at 710knus.com. My friends, Colorado is worth saving. Again, get tickets today at 710knus.com. Promises to be a great event on October 18th. I've been waiting for one of these big KNUS events since the pandemic, and here we are. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will be joined live in studio by Aaron Kane, the superintendent of Douglas County Schools, and in the 8 o'clock hour, joining me live in studio, Heidi Ganahl, Republican candidate for governor, will come on by. Looking forward to those conversations as we talk about important issues of the day. But I do want to tee up for you a little bit about yesterday's column and what I was able to emphasize and explore and expose in the Denver Gazette in a piece entitled "Tay Anderson Uses His Police Privilege." Remember this audio we played last week after the traffic stop on September 6th that the Denver Public Schools Board Vice President had for speeding in a school zone.
Hi, I'm Officer Gann, Denver Police. I stopped you for speeding, 35 and a 25. Can I see your license and registration, please?
Permission to pull it out of my pocket?
Yeah, I've asked you for certain documents. I expect you to reach around to get them.
All right, I just don't want to get shot by you.
Well, that's a myth.
I don't believe that's a myth.
I just don't want to get shot by you. And the officer says, that's a myth. And Tay says, I don't believe that's a myth. Well, that was from the body cam footage, which I obtained last week. Not this past week, but the previous week. And look, in a melodramatic statement to Fox 31, Tay Anderson, a.k.a. Denver's Jussie Smollett, claimed he'd been subjected to, quote, a comment that the officer made as my hands were raised. And that was him calling police brutality in the black community a myth. He built up to this accusation by making his traffic stop about race. He talked about being, quote, a black man in America, and how, quote, time and time again, black Americans have been the ongoing victims of police brutality. And yet, when you listen to that clip or you look at the full body cam footage, which is actually embedded in my column yesterday in the Denver Gazette, And you can also find it at jimmysangenberger.com/TayBodyCam. The body cam footage demonstrates Officer Dan did his job professionally, respectfully, and appropriately. If anyone was disrespectful, it was Tay Anderson. We heard the clip, so let's be clear about this. Anderson's precipitating comment wasn't about police brutality in general. He directly implied the officer who pulled him over wanted to shoot him in cold blood. And yet, Officer Dan kept his cool. Now, Anderson didn't leave it there in his statement to Fox 31. He said, quote, "I have contacted Denver police to review the footage to ensure that no other person within our communities is subjected to insensitive remarks like that in the future." But folks, Tay Anderson didn't just reach out to DPD, nor did he file a complaint, however. And by the way, that's confirmed with the police. The police say they have not received a complaint from Tay Anderson. According to Public Affairs and Communications Director Douglas Shipman, Anderson spoke directly with Acting Chief Ron Thomas. He initially texted former Chief Paul Pazin on his personal cell. Pazin referred the matter to Thomas to follow up. Thomas called Anderson by cell phone. And the department, as I said, confirms it has not received a formal complaint from Anderson. As I write in my column yesterday, why would Tay Anderson publicly malign the officer who held him accountable, yet never file a formal complaint? Did he think all he needed to do was get a one-on-one call from the police chief and then gripe about law enforcement and the media? How many people can call the police chief to complain about being pulled over in a school zone? What did Tay expect to get out of that conversation? Will he pay his ticket? Let's be real, folks. It looks like Tay attempted to use his unique privilege to get out of a traffic ticket. Any school board vice president should know not to speed outside a school. In fact, one would think he'd take extra precautions. But after the body cam footage was released, Tay doubled down impugning the officer again and then refused to take responsibility, saying, "My commitment to our students remains my top priority. Last week, a private matter became one of public interest, and I take accountability for my mistake." Au contraire, Tay, when a school board member speeds outside a district school, putting students' lives at risk, that is obviously a matter of public interest. Statement from the gentleman I mentioned from DPD before, Mr. Shepman, said in a statement to me, "Mr. Anderson expressed his concern about an insensitive comment made by the officer, just as he has in public statements. Chief Thomas reviewed the encounter captured on body-worn camera and followed up with him. Though Chief Thomas wishes to respectfully decline elaborating on the details of that conversation. As previously stated, the outcome of this conversation with regards to DPD is that further review and dialogue will take place to help ensure the experiences and perspectives of those we contact are handled in a sensitive matter," Shepman added. By the way, surprise, surprise, Tay Anderson did not respond to my emailed questions by deadline. But here's the thing, folks. This was far from the first time Tay Anderson had the police chief at his beck and call. Text messages from 2020, previously obtained via open records request, reveal frequent contact between Anderson and then Chief Pazin. That summer, Anderson constantly vilified law enforcement in public, you'll remember this, and accused police of pushing him to the ground at a protest. He worked to remove DPD officers from district high schools, but meanwhile, Tay Anderson frequently and politely inquired about protection for himself and his events while acting like the chief's buddy. In one example from June 1st, 2020, he texted Pazin, "Hey, sorry to bother. I just found this on Google about searches on me. Should I be concerned?" And he included a screenshot of troubling Google search terms. Pazin responded, "We'll look into it right away." So when it works to Tay Anderson's advantage, he impugns police and expects the public to believe it. When he needs something for his own gain, Tay gets to talk directly to the chief. It may claim publicly the police are a sworn enemy, but folks, at every turn, Tay Anderson eagerly exercises his police privilege and connections to benefit himself. Keep it here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Coming back, Jimmy Sangenberger here with you. News Talk 710 at KNUS. What a great conversation. What incredible music from the phenomenal Albert Cummings, who hails from Massachusetts. Good to be with you this morning. Hope you enjoyed a little break from the craziness and the insanity that is our political world today, and a little talk about music, plus some tunes. What a treat it is to get to have a little bit of fun talking about music, talking with a great guy like Albert Cummings here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, literally the best damn bumper music known to man, 9 years running on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Folks, crime, homelessness, inflation, a woke education system. Living in Colorado has never been more frustrating, and the radical progressive agenda is out of control. Now meet the candidates who have a chance to help make a difference at News Talk 710's Rescue Colorado Decision 2022. Join 710's Hugh Hewitt, Congressman Ken Buck, candidate for Senate Joe O'Day, candidate for Governor Heidi Ganahl, and other statewide candidates as we join together to address the serious problems that plague our state. News Talk 710's Rescue Colorado Decision 2022, Tuesday night, October 18th. It's happening at the Douglas County Events Center. Limited VIP seating available. Get tickets at 710knus.com. My friends, Colorado is worth saving. Again, get tickets today at 710knus.com. Promises to be a great event on October 18th. I've been waiting for one of these big KNUS events since the pandemic, and here we are. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will be joined live in studio by Aaron Kane, the superintendent of Douglas County Schools, and in the 8 o'clock hour, joining me live in studio, Heidi Ganahl, Republican candidate for governor, will come on by. Looking forward to those conversations as we talk about important issues of the day. But I do want to tee up for you a little bit about yesterday's column and what I was able to emphasize and explore and expose in the Denver Gazette in a piece entitled Tay Anderson Uses His Police Privilege. Remember this audio we played last week after the traffic stop on September 6th that the Denver Public Schools Board Vice President had for speeding in a school zone.
Hi, I'm Officer Gann, Denver Police. I stopped you for speeding, 35 and a 25. Can I see your license, registration, please?
Permission to pull it out of my pocket?
Yeah, I've asked you for certain documents. I expect you to reach around to get them.
All right, I just don't want to get shot by you.
Well, that's a myth.
I don't believe that's a myth.
I just don't want to get shot by you. And the officer says, that's a myth. And Tay says, I don't believe that's a myth. Well, that was from the body cam footage, which I obtained last week, not this past week, but the previous week. And look, in a melodramatic statement to Fox 31, Tay Anderson, a.k.a. Denver's Jussie Smollett, claimed he'd been subjected to, quote, a comment that the officer made as my hands were raised. And that was him calling police brutality in the black community a myth. He built up to this accusation by making his traffic stop about race. He talked about being, quote, a black man in America and how, quote, time and time again, black Americans have been the ongoing victims of police brutality. And yet, when you listen to that clip or you look at the full body cam footage, which is actually embedded in my column yesterday in the Denver Gazette, And you can also find it at jimmysangenberger.com/TayBodyCam. The body cam footage demonstrates Officer Dan did his job professionally, respectfully, and appropriately. If anyone was disrespectful, it was Tay Anderson. We heard the clip, so let's be clear about this. Anderson's precipitating comment wasn't about police brutality in general. He directly implied the officer who pulled him over wanted to shoot him in cold blood. And yet, Officer Dan kept his cool. Now, Anderson didn't leave it there in his statement to Fox 31. He said, quote, "I have contacted Denver police to review the footage to ensure that no other person within our communities is subjected to insensitive remarks like that in the future." But folks, Tay Anderson didn't just reach out to DPD, nor did he file a complaint, however. And by the way, that's confirmed with the police. The police say they have not received a complaint from Tay Anderson. According to Public Affairs and Communications Director Douglas Shipman, Anderson spoke directly with Acting Chief Ron Thomas. He initially texted former Chief Paul Pazin on his personal cell. Pazin referred the matter to Thomas to follow up. Thomas called Anderson by cell phone. And the department, as I said, confirms it has not received a formal complaint from Anderson. As I write in my column yesterday, why would Tay Anderson publicly malign the officer who held him accountable, yet never file a formal complaint? Did he think all he needed to do was get a one-on-one call from the police chief and then gripe about law enforcement and the media? How many people can call the police chief to complain about being pulled over in a school zone? What did Tay expect to get out of that conversation? Will he pay his ticket? Let's be real, folks. It looks like Tay attempted to use his unique privilege to get out of a traffic ticket. Any school board vice president should know not to speed outside a school. In fact, one would think he'd take extra precautions. But after the body cam footage was released, Tay doubled down impugning the officer again and then refused to take responsibility, saying, "My commitment to our students remains my top priority. Last week, a private matter became one of public interest, and I take accountability for my mistake." Au contraire, Ante, when a school board member speeds outside a district school, putting students' lives at risk, that is obviously a matter of public interest. Statement from the gentleman I mentioned from DPD before, Mr. Shepman, said in a statement to me, "Mr. Anderson expressed his concern about an insensitive comment made by the officer, just as he has in public statements. Chief Thomas reviewed the encounter captured on body-worn camera and followed up with him, though Chief Thomas wishes to respectfully decline elaborating on the details of that conversation. As previously stated, the outcome of this conversation with regards to DPD is that further review and dialogue will take place to help ensure the experiences and perspectives of those we contact are handled in a sensitive matter," Shepman added. By the way, surprise, surprise, Tay Anderson did not respond to my emailed questions by deadline. But here's the thing, folks. This was far from the first time Tay Anderson had the police chief at his beck and call. Text messages from 2020, previously obtained via open records request, reveal frequent contact between Anderson and then-Chief Pazin. That summer, Anderson constantly vilified law enforcement in public, you'll remember this, and accused police of pushing him to the ground at a protest. He worked to remove DPD officers from district high schools, but meanwhile, Tay Anderson frequently and politely inquired about protection for himself and his events while acting like the chief's buddy. In one example from June 1st, 2020, he texted Pazin, "Hey, sorry to bother. I just found this on Google about searches on me. Should I be concerned?" And he included a screenshot of troubling Google search terms. Pazin responded, "We'll look into it right away." So when it works to Tay Anderson's advantage, he impugns police and expects the public to believe it. When he needs something for his own gain, Tay gets to talk directly to the chief. He may claim publicly the police are a sworn enemy, but folks, at every turn, Tay Anderson eagerly exercises his police privilege and connections to benefit himself. Keep it here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.